This is the Torg Eternity Delphi Council Debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Jay and Lehman, and today we will be talking about the archetypes in Torg Eternity, and also reflecting back on the similar concept in classic Torg that they called templates. So, before we jump into that discussion, I do want to encourage you to write us at torgdcd@gmail.com. You can ask us questions, you can send us comments, we'll answer the questions to the best of our abilities, and we'll comment as well as we can on your comments. As a concept, one of the ways that you can make a character, or your players, if you're a game master, can make characters, is using archetypes that were present in Torg Eternity at the beginning, and then each time a new source book came out, there was archetypes attached to that in the game master packs. And basically what they were ready to run characters that had all the points and everything distributed. For, I say, the most part, because there were some times where errors got through, all the calculations and stuff were there, but some errors did get through on some of the archetypes. But overall, it was a simple, here's an archetype, here's a character, let's start playing. So Jay, have you used archetypes either as a player or as a game master? If so, did you like it? Did you not like it? What are your thoughts on the archetypes, etc.?
Yeah, I'm a fan of the archetypes. I've used them, I guess, both ways. I don't remember how. I think I somehow won a seat at a table ran by Greg for something. And it was online. I think it was during one of like the Kickstarters or Game Founds or something. And it was like, make a character. I didn't have any time, so I just grabbed the Electric Samurai archetype. Off I went. And after that, I kind of reworked it a little bit and made my Torganized play character from that. But yeah, still, it was just very convenient. And because I was a GM, I was already familiar with them. I didn't really want to think too much about it because I didn't have a character of my own at the time, because I was always a GM, so it was just like, I think Electric Samurai are cool, and it kind of almost seems like Electric Samurai is the default GM character for some reason, but anyways, yeah, it was nice and easy. And then for running games, I have used them. I ran my initial group through the day ones, or actually just the first two day ones, before they were like, okay, no, we're making characters. But aside from them, I have run convention games. I ran a game at RatCon 1 year, and I've run some Torganized play, and I did that Up the Creek demo thing on Start Playing Games that we did 1 year for Torg. And having archetypes is very simple. Here you go. Here's your pre-gen. Off you go, right? And the nice thing is there's too many of them right now, right? Like, if you look at all of them all at once, it's just overwhelming.
Right.
However, that does give the GM a little bit of leeway to change things up, because if you're having an aisle adventure, you can grab a ton of aisle characters if you want it to be very thematic, or you can pick and choose a different combination of characters from other realities that will fit the adventure as well. So you don't have one of those situations where, sure, there's a ball that we have to go to and impress some nobles, but not a single person here is in any way, shape, or form a social character.
Right.
And just a bunch of drooling troglodytes. So that can also help. So I really like them. They're pretty basic. It just saves you time in creating a character. But sometimes when you don't know what you want to do, just grab a random archetype, off you go.
Yeah, I would agree. I will say that when Torg Eternity first came out, there wasn't enough, because my players at the time had been playing classic Torg for a very long time and were accustomed to all the templates that classic Torg had. And in classic Torg, I had them all written or typed out on a piece of paper, and I would hand it out to players, And I know we do this audio as well as visual, but if you're visual, I still have that paper that I would hand out. And then I had a rule that once a template was used, it couldn't be used again because there were literal over 100 of these. Mm-hmm. And there were like two or three that everybody wanted to be. So it was like, there's not that many Dark Avengers out there, and I don't need
wanted to be the RCMP guy.
Yeah. One of the first characters that I game mastered, he was a Royal Canadian Mounted Police, Lawrence the Mountie. Played a nemesis card against the corporate ninja and got slaughtered.
Oh dear.
But in my games, it was always the Dark Avenger. We had a Dark Avenger. Dark Avenger. We had a Shadow Avenger. We had a Purple Avenger. We had a Kid Avenger. And finally, that's when I was like, no more Avengers. Just no. That's kind of where I decided, okay, template gets used once, and then it's done until we go through all of them, and we never went through all of them.
Yeah.
But
you guys have to die a lot.
Yes. But then, with Torg Eternity, when Torg Eternity first came out and their first set of archetypes came out, it was just a couple from each realm. So it was there's two types of Nile characters, and the one that I, you know, the thing I'm thinking about isn't available here.
Only one Ororsh.
Yes, and only one Ororsh, or a monster hunter, if you want to follow the the archetype there. But as the source book started coming out and they started adding to the base archetypes, then I started to feel that it was getting to where classic Torg used to be. And then, like you said, it was very easy to just, on the spur of a moment, hey, let's play. Instead of people taking an hour to look, you could. I have a again, sorry for the audio people, but visually I have a binder that they're in, and I actually need a bigger binder because I can't put any more pages in. And at a Rorsch, they stopped fitting because I put them in the plastic sleeves so they don't break and get torn. But they're all there. And it's just easy to either hand that out or, as you said, a selection if it's too overwhelming for people. And at conventions, I've seen it where the game master of that table will just hand out maybe 10, and, you know, four or five of you will pick out of those. So half or a little over half or a little under half, sorry, do not get used. But it kind of brings in the pool, and as you said, you can tailor the archetypes to the adventure so that you're not missing anything and you're not stumbling over each other's toes where you have like three people that have picked very similar archetypes, like three melee combat people and no healers, that type of thing. So that's a nice thing to do. Let me ask you this. How much do you either yourself change? You said you changed one after you played with Greg. How much do you allow change to be for an archetype, say with a player?
I mean, for me, it was just, I just changed one of the perks, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was going more psychic. But it's, yeah, if, here's the thing with my home group, we don't really use the archetypes. Mm-hmm. They're just make a character. So if I'm using an archetype, the point of it is that I'm doing it with someone who's either new or I want to just get started.
Right.
So if I'm using archetypes, I say you don't change anything. You just have the archetype. You change the name. That's
right.
That is sort of one of my pet peeves, that sometimes I'll see people that when they take an archetype, they glance it over and they start playing, but they don't have like a name. Like they don't make a character behind it, right? They're just playing a sheet of stats. So right. I always try to make sure people actually read the backstory and have like
Yeah, there's the whole
maybe add a
reverse
yeah, there
side.
is, and then maybe have them add something else to it as well, just like a piece of flavor, like ask them for a perk and a flaw of some kind, right? Or a merit and flaw, no mechanical modifiers, just something, right? But yeah, so yeah, I don't usually let them mess with it at all, because it kind of defeats the purpose. It's just gonna they're gonna start tinkering, and then God knows. And these archetypes are made with voodoo science anyways. They're not necessarily created the same way as a normal player character. It's been mentioned on Discord many a time that they don't all have the maybe accurate starting cache, or even might have extra species abilities depending. And then you get into situations where if they're using backer perks, like all bets are off there. Or even ones from the Infiniverse too. So yeah, I just say go with it.
Right, so you're kind of the extreme of the if I use archetypes, you're sticking with the archetype. If not, then you're just making a character from scratch. And because if you're doing that with some and somebody wants to be an archetype, then limiting them would be just
Yeah,
kind of
because
unfair.
even though the archetypes aren't necessarily made like if the exact same process, they're usually made more fair than what some, cheesemonger min-maxers might do with the system. So I think a lot of people who try to squeeze every last plus out of their characters would always want to modify their archetypes, which would then make it kind of like a not a level playing field if some people were allowed to modify them or even create their own characters, and some were just using an archetype. The person just using an archetype is likely to be at somewhat of a disadvantage. And the real thing is, you don't need to juice your character too much. Plain archetype characters could do just fine. It's not that difficult of a game when it comes right down to it. They're kind of meant for flavor, and they're meant to be like introductory characters. Like, they're not supposed to be like super involved. And sometimes you get situate well, I'll come to back that to that later. But the yeah, so that's just it's just the thing. Like, if you allow some people to mess with them, then that can also it's like, why don't we just make characters in the first place then?
Right. So, as I stated in Classic Torg, I did the templates. I just because Also, a major difference between Classic Torg and Torg Eternity is the number of skills. So there were like over 140 skills in Classic Torg, and if you have your
Lovely.
players looking over that skill list, it will take them absolutely forever. And while the templates of Classic Torg only gave you what they called a tag skill, which was where three adds were, and then no other skills were given. They gave you a list of possible skills. And that list of possible skills is where you split up your skill points, and nothing could be above two in that system. And what I did as a house rule is I said any skill that you have on your template, but you haven't put a point into, you're still somewhat considered trained, so you get that advantage of exploding on 10s and 20s. It's just you haven't trained it enough to get that one add yet. So that kind of did things, and people then would look at an entire skill, sheet and kind of figure out what template they wanted and wouldn't feel bad about, okay, I have a limited number of points and there's all of these skills on this sheet that I'm not able to use. And that was also a way that on the very few times that like the 108 or whatever templates like somebody just absolutely didn't want, then because of the min-max thing that you had talked about, well yeah, then you make it your character, but you don't have those freebie zero add
Right.
skills. So there was kind of a little balance, not a perfect balancing act, but there was a little bit of
Something.
something in there. Now, again, my players, for the most part, in Torg Eternity have come from Classic Torg. So they are used to advancing and accustomed to making characters, even with the archetypes, they had to split up skills, and with now there being a lot less skills in Torg Eternity, then there is not as much decision making, so normally they can make up a character usually as fast as deciding between all the archetypes.
Yeah.
Because if you're making a character, you might have a, I'm going to be this, but if you have all these archetypes, then you're going to start doubting your decision. Like, I'm going to be this. Oh, wait, that thing looks cool. Oh, wait, that thing looks cool. But
that's why I was thinking a way to do it would just be, you know, the character blips that you get, like, so just put one of each of those in a bag.
Uh-huh.
You shake it
up.
You take out the blip. That's your character.
Sure.
You
right, right. I, on the other hand, have started, whenever I make a character, have started using the archetypes for that fact of I just want to get a character made fast. Like, so for all the characters I made for Torganized Play, they're usually an archetype that is not readily recognizable as that archetype. So I will change their visual appearance and stuff like that. And it was one thing that when I was doing some with my home group, I was doing shorter, like just mission based things instead of the big campaign, as like testing rules and stuff. And then I would be just, hey, you got to do an archetype because we just need to start and get fast. And I had one player going like, oh, I really like this archetype, but the picture looks dumb. And I was like, you don't have to look like that. So
right?
if you don't like the picture, the pictures are supposed to be evocative. They are supposed to kind of get you kind of primed and ready to play that character. But if the doesn't appeal to you, but everything else does, and he was even reading the backstory and everything, like, yeah, this is exactly what I want, except for the picture. And I was just like, I'll find a picture somewhere. I'll make a picture, you know, for your token. Don't worry about it, because it doesn't have to look like that.
There's a reason it gives multiple possible names, right?
Right. And it, the whole name thing, turn the sheet over, and on the back there's a list of normally 5 to 10 names, somewhere around there, that we as the people who have written the archetypes have put onto it to allow them to be tailor-made. So that has worked very well. I'm trying to remember which cyber papacy archetype, but there is one that has basically a cyber arm and a, it's not the cyber Templar, but it's something similar that I turned into like a cybernetic musketeer. So they have a, instead of the sword of David, it's like a rapier of David, you know, and just like change little names here and there. And similar things with all of my characters. I just kind of grab an archetype and figure out how I can change it so it's not readily noticeable as that archetype, but if you would compare the stats, then it's that archetype. So I'm a big proponent for in non official stuff reskinning. And I want to be clear on that. If you're playing at your home game, reskin anything at all. But when I'm writing for Torg, I'm not taking stuff from other places and just reskinning them for Torg.
I mean, that's a classic GM thing too.
You
need a monster, I'll just use these stats and describe it as something else.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. And that works. Players, you can use that GM hack for yourself if you're needing to get a character made fast. So what other thoughts do you have or archetypes to be used as a game master? Just to let the viewers and listeners know, before we started recording, you had sent me a kind of a sheet that showed that you had made up to Pan Pacifica backer archetypes, like all the archetypes directly in Roll 20.
Yes, I have all the almost all of the archetypes released in a Roll 20 campaign, so that I can just transmogrify them out if needed. The concept was to help running demo games so I could just pull them out. And it got to be a certain point of, well, I started, so I might as well finish. And ironically, I never did finish, but I got. Because I've done all of the regular archetypes and I've done almost all of the backer archetypes. I just didn't do Pan Pacifica backer archetypes, and because they weren't out yet when I finished doing it, and then when they finally came out, I was like, oh, it's enough. But I also did archetypes from Infiniverse Exchange products as well. So there's a ton of them, and the idea was just to have them available, but I very quickly realized, as I mentioned before, there's too many. When I was doing play testing for Demon Town, I opened it up to my players and said, "Here you go, choose one of these." And they were just like, "Oh my God, there's too many." Also, I've done something similar because you know how you said for the templates, you said once only. So I did that not with all the archetypes, but especially a lot of the backer archetypes. But not just backer archetypes, pretty much all the aspirants as well. I put a little thing on here calling them unique. So the concept was you would have to ask to pick one of those. There could only be one unique character per like game. Like if he died, it could be replaced with another unique character, I guess. But and then once they were used, they were done. So that's where I've had the Eilish sprite being used. I've had the the Stallinger being used, and some other things like that. So those were limitations. Otherwise, everything else, if you want to play a journalist, you could play another journalist later. That's fine. But that is one of the ones that I did for the for an adventure I ran for a demo is okay, let's change things up. Let's bring in the journalist because no one ever picks the journalist. Let's bring in the what are they called? The Reaper, that Living Land one with the sickles. Because I knew that most of the enemies were Gosspog, so that the extra it would actually be good. Whereas in normally you probably wouldn't take it. But you know what? Making this big page of like hundreds of archetypes really showed a lack of living land archetypes. Because half of the archetypes from the Living Land campaign were core Earth characters. And it's because it's kind of like the opposite of Classic Torg. There are so many more core Earth archetypes than any other realm. Nile and Isle come close, but core Earth definitely has the lead. But I guess there's just only so many ways people could really say caveman and Adinos is the problem.
I'm looking at the classic Torg sheet, and they had four Living Land templates.
Right.
There were the Earther Gone Primitive, the Renegade Enos, the Stallinger Optant, and the Storyteller, and that was it. Even like Terra, which wasn't a realm, but it was kind of a source book that was an offshoot of Nile Empire. Like, what had happened to Terra after Mobius left? And there are like seven of those, so almost double from a reality that was not even involved in the entirety of
Well,
the
we got
possibility
18 Living
wars.
Land archetypes, so I guess it's moved up a little
But
bit.
I do look Core Earth had a lot, and there are more Eidnos Core Earth archetypes than there
Oh,
are Living
Skippy.
Land. The Eidnos Gone Native, the Eidnos Tech Prodigy is just a couple that I see right here. But yes, that's I think something that tends to happen with all of the or a lot of the archetypes when the source books came out, and then that reality's archetype, some of those were kind of taken by Core Earth, and that kind of expanded Core Earth. I was very happy though when Arorsch came out, and then there was actually more than just the one Arorsch monster hunter archetype. And they had some neat ones. I actually, again, here's something I personally did is I just took more of the background for one of them, which was kind of a investigator, and then I took kind of that mentality and combined it with the stats of one of the occultists that makes potions. So it was more of a, again, reskin than an actual thing. But sometimes I've seen when before I ever game mastered Classic Torg, there was a couple of times where the one that I remember the first was a guy couldn't decide. He wanted to be Aurorsch, his character from Aurorsch, which was completely crazy back in Classic Torg, because you did not, or you were beholden to your world laws when you were other places. So the Aurorsch world laws were bad. So if you were from Aurorsch, you took those bad world laws with you, and they affected you. Where somebody was from the Nile Empire took those good laws with him, and those would affect him. But he really wanted to be a Aurorsch character, and he couldn't decide between like the lunatic and the Sekhelem priest. So he was like, "Hey, Game Master, can I combine these two?" And the Game Master was like, "Go for it." And that was a great character. It was like a crazy Sekhelem priest that would blather off stuff, and it made no sense to anybody, and would turn in the living land, turn triceratopses into pillars of salt and stuff like that. Very, very fun and dramatic. So again, I highly recommend reskinning to have a little fun with something, especially if you see the base stats and you're like, I like this, but I kind of don't like the fluff around it. Make the fluff better, or take the fluff from something else and add to it, make something a little more unique. So was there anything else with archetypes before I get into the main difference between templates and archetypes and talk about that and how to use it in Torg Eternity?
I mean, that's pretty much all I have on it that I can think of offhand. I know that you should always probably double check to see if they've been errated or anything, because
Right.
I know some of them, like just in the design process, sometimes the archetypes get made and then like a month later rules change
Yes.
before books are published, and then suddenly they get published and you're like, hey, this is referencing a skill that doesn't exist
Right.
or a spell that doesn't exist or
Or a
something like that.
perk.
Yeah.
Or one
So,
that's changed.
check them over. Make sure, if you're the GM, make sure you're giving people up-to-date information.
Yes, I'll say that actually hit me with, I believe it's the Scrounged Occult Tech or Scrounged Cyberware, the Tharkold one that allows anybody to take it. Recalibrated Cyberware is the Cyberfable one. It's I want to say it's
Salvaged?
Salvaged or
Yeah,
Scrounged.
something like that.
But originally, in one of the very first versions of the Tharkold book, it had been written to allow that 8,000 to be used for both cyberware and occult tech. And so I built that archetype having both cyberware and occult tech. And then later on, way down the line, and we're going back over the archetypes, and I realized that that was no longer the case. And in my mind, I had like built it up as like, oh, this is so cool. You can combine this and combine that. So I kind of wrote it into it that that could happen to just let it be known, hey, you could do this. But I pretty much then had to buy things properly instead of just saying, oh, here's 8,000 that can be spent on anything. And there, as you said, there were times where things changed and then they weren't, the archetypes were made under a certain version and then things changed before the very final version, or even the preview version. So there's those few archetypes that didn't get the things changed, and that's where you look and the spell's not there or the perk's not there or the whatever is the equipment is not there. If you come up with that, just throw in an equivalent.
Yeah, that's really all you got to do.
And the last thing I wanted to say, you had brought it up earlier, was sometimes the archetypes have like a little bit more, you know, maybe there's a little bit more than the starting 2000. And sometimes that happened out of necessity because you start off with 2000 and you're given a picture of the Aurora Shakultus, who has a robot arm, which is a prosthetic in Aurora that is like 1,000 or 2,000. It's like a significant amount, and they wouldn't be able to have anything else or very few things to make that archetype work.
Right.
So some of the times when we were doing that, because of the picture, it was a okay, this arm doesn't really do. It doesn't give you a bonus to strength like cyberware or anything else. I think you can use it to take a wound, but then it's destroyed and you have to get it replaced. It can't be repaired. So I felt that that was a fine give and take for it, and discounted that amount of money. Again, there's a picture made that needs to be used. And it was assigned to this archetype, and I'm assigned to write this archetype. So, you know, because this was before I was
Gotta
with,
figure something
got to figure
out.
something out. And on my little defunct YouTube channel, I had thrown in the making an archetype video there when I asked Ulysses, "Hey, can I do this?" Got the approval, and made the character right there. So if you want to watch Lehman's strange train of thought in making archetypes, you can watch that because I basically talked through the archetype, making the archetype out loud. It was not, there was no preconceived notion or, you know, anything before I went into it. I just started right then and there to kind of show the process that I go through. So we talked about templates, and templates and archetypes are very, very similar. They all have that backstory. They all, depending on what it was either a page that had a front and a back, or it was a turned sideways page that kind of
Half a
half a
page.
page,
Really annoying.
right? And really small type, but it was the same information. It's just that they shrunk both pages onto the one page sideways. But it would have like, it didn't give a name. It would just have like the name of the archetype, like the monster hunter for, or the template. So it'd be like the Victorian vampire or something like that. And then it would have all this the skill list, like I said, but it only had one skill filled in, and that was a +3 known as the tag skill. You had to, of course, at least put one add in reality, and then everything else was kind of up to you. With the
With maybe some magic skills.
with some magic skills, again, that you would need to put your, I believe you'd still have to put a point into if you wanted to use them, but there
If
might
that
have,
was your tag skill.
right, if it was your tag skill, then you, it was a 3. Then the templates, or sorry, the archetypes of Torg Eternity, everything is filled out already. It's a ready to go. So there is that, which is like better, which is worse. I understand the archetypes of Torg Eternity are great at convention or something. Boom, here they are. But I also, as a player, I liked the limited list, but also the here's a little freedom you can go with. So what are your thoughts on like the differences between those two?
I mean, the archetypes are really just pre-gens. That I don't know if they really warrant a special name, to be honest, because almost every game has pre-gens for convention games and things like that. So for that purpose, I kind of like the archetypes. But if you're looking for like a springboard, for players who are like, if you're playing a home campaign with people and you don't want to necessarily explain all of the character creation rules. We could just be like, look, here's your character. You can fill out these skills, and then we're ready to go, right? Then it's much quicker, but they still get to feel some agency in how they design their character to do what they want. instead of just picking a character, be like, why doesn't this guy have enough dodge? Like
Right.
that kind of a thing. So, I mean, they're both good for different things. And
Yeah,
I would, so I think kind of like the template is better for a home game, whereas the archetypes are better for quick pick up and go kind of games.
I would agree. Also, the templates, the attributes were already determined, so it wasn't like you got everything. So it was the attributes were determined, your tag skill was determined, and then you kind of figured out what you wanted to place in there as well. So it wasn't as deep and messy as character creation when you're trying to figure out your attributes as well, but it wasn't as absolutely defined as the archetype. So I would suggest for if you have that home game, but you have characters or players that have a trouble deciding, then you possibly, if you want to go through the archetypes in Torg Eternity, choose one of those skills that's kind of a tag skill and tell your players, okay, these other things are suggestions, but this one you gotta keep. This plus three here, or you adjust one that's a
And one in
plus three,
reality.
and your one in reality, that you just say here is what it is to start off with, and then you can add a little adjustment, but you don't have to get into the figuring out attribute points and figuring out, looking at the, even though the skill list is smaller, it still gives you an even more condensed skill list of here are some things that fit this archetype and kind of turn it into a template. So I think that's kind of a thing that game masters and players can possibly use.
Yeah, it depends on your players because I have two of my players love making characters. Like a lot. Like they'll just make more new characters all the time. And
Martyr
so
cards are fished
yes, many
for.
a dwarf has been martyred. But yeah, so that they are all in on we make our characters from scratch.
Right.
So I haven't really had a home game group that wanted to just do an archetypes. So I also don't have as much experience with that aside from special situations.
Right. And it is also good for the template archetypes, the gear, just so you kind of get some
Yeah.
basic gear.
Don't have to spend time buying stuff,
Yeah, it's all kind of right there. Boom, I have it. If in classic Torg, they would also, some of them would have money that you could use. Although, if you were, I guess it would be a billionaire today, but back then it was a million. They had the CEO millionaire that just was, what is your special ability? Cash.
Rolling on those stock charts in the Nippon Tech book.
Yes, yes. I actually had used those. Are the players in various groups, I think I had three going at the time, kind of made a company to participate in the stock market, and they would determine after every adventure how much they were keeping, how much was going to their group, and then how much was going to the whole Storm Knight company to try to do stuff. So that was interesting.
Yeah, I used it in a cyberpunk game once, but never got to use it for Torque.
Nice. So, do you have anything else that you can think about uses for? I have one that's like fuzzy.
Just be careful not letting completely out of whack. Okay, yeah, I guess that's something. Is there has been some talk that some backer archetypes and the perks associated with them might be a little powerful or extremely limited, both ways. So what I have kind of come around to say for myself, for my campaign, is if you want to use a backer perk, it has to be attached to that backer archetype. You can't just, even though there are ones that totally make sense for anyone to have and have since been reprinted in the Nile Empire and Pan Pacifica books, so
Right.
they're free for all now. But like if they haven't been reprinted like that, then you have to take the archetype. And I'm talking backer
Right.
archetypes specifically. And even more so in Finiverse, woefully untested archetypes and perks. So that's just a personal house rule for me.
No, I can see that, because all of the normal archetypes, there's no archetype perks for those. All of their perks come from the source
Just
books.
normal, yeah.
Whereas the backer archetypes, not all of them, but the
No.
vast majority of them have a perk or spell or something or mystic effect that is only on that archetype and not printed anywhere else. So on those, well, your game, if there's any perk whatsoever that you think is bad, change it or not allow it, and that goes all the way through to archetypes. So yes, read the archetypes before you hand them out. I never did have anybody be like the Dragon Rider from Classic Torg because they got a dragon. You know, that could be something where it's like, no, guys, we're not. No starting characters with a dragon.
That really makes you have to rethink the whole campaign.
Right. The game, if your archetype or template is making it so that your campaign immediately starts off imbalanced and heading towards a downward spiral, you might think about
There are a
not
couple of
allowing that.
there's a couple of archetypes like that, like the tramp freighter captain, who technically comes with a trademark
Tramp.
vehicle boat, like a ship, right? That's a pretty significant thing, and it's and any trademark vehicle's a toughie because it's like, how often am I gonna get to use this thing?
Right.
And then the GM has to decide, am I basing the whole campaign off of this thing now? Or is it just gonna come up like once every three acts,
Right. No,
So
I
that's another thing to be thinking of when you pick availability of archetypes.
Yeah, 'cause it either could work, it can break the game, or it can make it so that the player doesn't feel that it's good, you know?
Do you want to deal with the repercussions of taking the plucky kid into Ur-Horsh,
Right.
right?
I could see the Realm Runner character and my long-standing classic Torg, he had a trademark vehicle, but it was a Grumman Goose, which was one of the airplanes that can land on the water with the little pontoons, but it also had
Yeah.
wheels, so it could land on the ground as well. So that was able to go a lot of different places, and sometimes
Wasn't
they.
that the same plane that was someone's trademark vehicle in the classic Torg examples all the time? I can't remember who it was. Was it Quinn Sebastian, the yellow crab? It was I can't remember the name
I'm
now.
sure. I do know that they had a Grumman Goose in the equipment, you know, the
Yeah.
vehicle section, and that's what was chosen. And it worked well because, like, sometime instead of, you know, they needed to go down the river, they needed to get a boat anyway, so it was like, let's just float the plane down, you know, because,
Right.
and that worked. And then what I did is, because that character also took zero combat skills and would
Right.
just like hide behind
I'm just
barrels
in
and
the plane,
stuff,
guys.
yeah, and stuff. So I made it a kind of a funny little thing that he was always able to find a vehicle for the group wherever he went. But it would be something local but like off. So like when they in the middle of the Midwest in the United States, he got a school bus. You know,
Right.
it wasn't like a van or anything. And then when he was
Gets
when
a
they
tuk-tuk.
yes, when they got into London, then of course he got a double decker, you know, bus.
Right.
You know, just it was
Got
all types of stuff like
it.
that. So it kind of brought that character forward. But yes, look at the especially the equipment, see if that might be a little too overpowered or underused. And you if somebody really if one of your players like really likes an idea, but you're like, yeah, I like that idea, but it won't be used every time and maybe not enough, maybe you come up with something else for that player to use in those times that they can't use their thing. Like if somebody has one of those, you know, speedster motorcycles, and you're just in a place that doesn't, you know, like a Rorsch, you know, maybe they get a bicycle, you know, something. Yeah. Just a little fun
and
thing.
And be prepared to answer the question of what does my flashlight do?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
there's actually a fair amount of the archetypes have gear on them that all make sense, but they're not necessarily detailed in the core book. Then, but some of them have gotten detailed since then. But sometimes you just gotta make sense, you know, like come up with what it does.
Right. And one of the things I also have done, especially after years pass and prices change, a lot of times it's like, hey, this says this amount, but that's kind of wonky. Right. I'll just Google it, you know, okay. Yeah. And then I won't even adjust for some possibility war. It's just like, this is how much it is. If you want to, you know, double a price or whatever, you can, but that's just a quick way as a lazy game master tool. Just tell the player, you know, I want a laptop. How much is it? I don't know. Google, see what Walmart sells them for, or HP, or, you know, if you want a bigger one, you know, look at one of the boutique, you know, gaming computer shop, you know, yeah, online shops to figure out what it is. So that's things that you can use for those archetypes and templates and starting characters and stuff. So I think we pretty much got through everything that I at least can think about for archetypes, how game masters can use them, how players can use. Oh, game masters, starting players, I guess one thing, starting players can get the archetypes, and then if you need kind of NPCs, they're good to
that's true too.
To grab, you know, just as a
boom. Anytime it's like, oh, there's gonna be an occultist, yoink, just grab the archetype,
right?
Maybe shave some wounds off depending on how important they are, but
right, yeah. Or if you want a little higher threat, give them some more adds to it. Look at the I believe it's the Game Master Primer that kind of specifies what the
value. It gives you a good starting point.
So that's something that the archetypes could be used for. But other than that, hopefully you got some good information from the archetypes and how to use them for your game as players and as game masters. We do encourage you to write us at torgdcd@gmail.com. You can send us questions, comments, and we will answer to the best of our ability. We will comment back. But until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmverse. Bye.